This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. This summer's Olympic Games are the first ever to be held in South America. And whether it wants the spotlight or not, the Olympic Games will be a coming out party in the biggest global cotillion of them all for Brazil, a nation that has the capacity on paper to be a superpower, but instead has a per capita income stalled in levels from the 1960s. But as was the case for other bells to the gold medal ball, Munich, Rome, Tokyo, and Mexico, the chance to be on the world stage, ready or not, is irresistible. David Goldblatt, author of The Games, A Global History of the Olympics, is our guide to the Games this week.
The four Games of the 60s and 70s are all held by nations whose elites decide to make the Olympics a gigantic coming-out statement of a process of national development. In the case of, you know, Germany, Japan, and Italy, who host, you know, the Rome Games, the Munich Games, the Tokyo Games, it's saying, okay, the Second World War's over. We're back, and we've undergone the most extraordinary sort of economic boom. Take a look at us. In the case of Mexico, it's we finally arrived. We joined the OECD. And now we're an industrialized nation, we can host the game. So that's a kind of a different kind of nationalism at work. And I think they have set the tone for, you know, the gigantic games of the 21st century.
And really, you point out in the book that while we don't want to compare anyone to the Nazis, the techniques that were developed in the 30s by Germany are very much what China uses in the Beijing Olympics to increase this notion of spectacle at the games. It's absolutely a solid line that can be drawn.
The Germans in many ways sort of set the agenda, but it's worth remembering that, you know, Los Angeles 1932 is just as important. I mean, Carl Diem, who was the man running the 1936 Olympic Games, was notorious in 1932 for badgering everybody with endless questions, taking a million photographs and filling his notebooks with how the LA way, as they described it. And of course, the people running the games in LA in 1932 are a combination of, you know, the Hollywood elite and real estate boosters, you know, who've spent, as Carrie McWilliams said, the great historian of Southern California, you know, the greatest real estate advertising enterprise in human history is Southern California in the first half of the 20th century. So these are people who knew about how to put on a show. And while they didn't have the kind of money and the sort of insane, pompous grandeur of 1936, in terms of thinking about how do you sell this thing? How do you market this thing? You know, think about it as a show, not just as some sort of obscure, gentlemanly celebration of sport. You know, this is show business.
Distance running, in many ways, was a narrative all about the colony beating the colonial master on the track.
Absolutely. Abibi Bikila, the 1960 Rome Olympics, wins the marathon. This is a man who's grown up, you know, his first job is as one of the guards, the imperial guards for Haile Selassie, the emperor of Ethiopia, a man deposed by the Italian army in the 1930s when they colonized it. And here we are less than three decades later. And Abibi Bikila, you know, barefoot destroys the world record and destroys the field. And on the final run, which goes through the Arch of Constantine, which is pretty good symbolism in and of itself, he actually runs past a gigantic obelisk that had been removed from Ethiopia under Mussolini's orders and placed as a kind of, you know, a victory trophy on the streets of Rome. And Bikila runs past it, destroying the field. It's at those moments, you know, that I go, for all the nonsense, there are moments when the Olympics bring us, you know, transcendent cultural moments of sort of liberation and inspiration. They're few and far between, but they're there.
David Goldblatt is the author of The Games, A Global History of the Olympics. In our last installment, we'll talk about how the Olympics, both this year and in previous years, has led the way for new and emerging countries and provides a living document to what happens when certain nations break down. That's tomorrow.